This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Our immigration system in this country is insane. It's suicidal and it's insane. Just obviously, we're going to be talking a lot about Somalia tonight. We have great guests, Dustin Gregg, Tyler O'Neill. We're going to talk about so much of this Somali network. But just think about Somalia as a country. It's awful. Every part of it is awful. It's war-torn, starvation, civil wars, genocides take place there. There is so much inbreeding in Somalia that, according to some reports, the average IQ is considered mental retardation here in America. The average IQ in Somalia is mentally retarded. That's a horrible place. So that, of course, begs the question, how in the world did we end up with 80,000 of these freaking people in one state? 80,000. Well, let me go ahead and spoil it for you. Losers like George Bush and Barack Obama brought in as many of them as they possibly can. And it always seems to work out this way. These people don't come over here and wrap themselves in the red, white, and blue and learn the Constitution and serve the country and better their communities. No, like they all do, they come over here and take a steaming dump on the place. Ilhan Omar isn't the exception. She's the norm.
These people are just idiots. I really, you know, I'm at the point where it's become really hard to have an intellectual debate with any of these people, because the level of stupidity that they are displaying every single day is frankly embarrassing, not just in Congress, but as Americans. And the fact that these people are allowed to say just the most ridiculous things tells you that the dumbing of the United States has arrived, because how else do we get a Trump presidency again?
And so the idea that this is a white nation that needs to be preserved is a fascinatingly disgusting view, because this country is one for the many.
I would say our country should be more fearful of white men across our country, because they are actually causing most of the deaths within this country.
Why is that person still here? Forgetting about in Congress. What country in the history of the world would allow people to come here and immediately start crapping on the place, strip her citizenship, and send her back to the land of idiocy she comes from? But we don't do that in this country, because we have the most bonkers, suicidal freaking policies on immigration I've ever heard of in my entire life. Dustin Gregg is about to drop a bomb of information on you and me about the fraud in the Somali community. Just get ready. Go ahead and take your blood pressure medication now, all right? We'll talk to Dustin next. I hate the large mobile companies, Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. And it's not that I hate them because of their service. You know, the phones work fine, the calls, some get dropped, I understand that. I hate when big corporations take my money and use it against my culture and my country. You remember the St. George Floyd protests? Have you looked up your mobile company and saw what they did during all that? I just got so disgusted with corporate America back then. It's a huge reason why I switched to Pure Talk. Pure Talk's on the same towers, so I'm not asking you to sacrifice coverage. Pure Talk is veteran-led, patriot-led. They don't give to communist street animals. Pure Talk gives back to veterans when they give back. And right now, when you switch, you save 50% off your first month. Keep your phone, keep your number. Pure Talk always makes it easy. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV.
Dozens of people of East African descent have been charged, convicted, and sentenced for stealing more than $1 billion in taxpayer money from government programs during COVID. Do you take responsibility for failing to stop this fraud in your state?
Well, certainly I take responsibility for putting people in jail. Governors don't get to just talk theoretically. We have to solve problems. And I will note, it's not just Somalis. Minnesota is a generous state. Minnesota is a prosperous state, a well-run state. We're AAA bond rated, but that attracts criminals. There's a reason Minnesota ranks as the top, lowest childhood poverty, best place for children to live. People are taking advantage of that. They're going to prison. That is totally disconnected with demonizing an entire group of people who came here fleeing civil war and created a vibrant community that makes Minnesota and this country better. But that's Donald Trump. Deflect, demonize, come up with no solutions. He's not going to help fix anything on fraud. My God, there's a big difference between fraud and corruption is something he knows about.
I think my favorite part of that whole little spiel was the people of East African descent. The way these people just have to try to maneuver around things. Joining me now, Dustin Gregg, wonderful columnist with townhall.com. Who knows? He's forgotten more about this stuff than I will ever know. So, Dustin, I'm gonna hand the floor over to you because I don't live in Minnesota. I've spent some time there fishing, of course, like every other red-blooded American. But like most Americans, I'm looking on in horror at a new story every day about some Somali fraud ring or rape or robbery. What's going on?
All very good questions. And, you know, we'll try to uncover it as much as we can here in the short time we got. But just to start, I mean, that video is just so on brand of Tim Walz, just the gaslighting time after time after time. And, you know, the amazing part of all of this is ever since the Rufo report dropped, showing that, like, hey, this might go to Al-Shabaab terrorists with the funding and the fraud and all these different things. The incredible part, Jesse, is this has been covered since like 2016, 2018. And the fraud, really, the initial red flag started in 2014. So that's going all the way back to a program we call CCAP, which is a child assistance program. So parents who have low income who might not be able to afford childcare, they can contribute a little bit to those daycare fees to send your kid to school so you can go to work. That's kind of the whole point of it. Well, early on, we found out this is where Somali fraud starts. We're putting up daycares with fake billing of fake amount of time kids being there. And we're coming up with fake names on top of that, all incandescent with how Feeding Our Future was set up with these fake names and everything. That was happening in 2020, you know, almost a decade later. But it all started in 2014. And they caught onto that pretty quick, the way it was all set up. Back then, we had a pretty, you know, balanced legislature, despite having governor control for Democrats and the AG's office. You know, respectably, you know, there was still split legislative authority. So we were able to catch some of that. Go to 2018, you're going to actually start to see whistleblowers come out saying, hey, this funding might be going to the Horn of Africa to fund Al-Shabaab. This started in 2018. None of this is new. We're just finding out about it because Tim Walz was put onto the national stage, being picked as Kamala Harris's VP candidate. And really, a lot of the only reason you guys know my name and why I'm on the show frequently is to cover Tim Walz and all of this crap that has been avoided for so many years. Now, it's the greatest state gift that's ever happened to Minnesotans because now we have a real opportunity to actually get Republican control in the state for the first time. But yeah, none of this stuff is new. It's just now being developed and covered now, which is great. And we really do appreciate all the coverage so we can actually bring change to the state. But that's kind of covering a little bit of, like, you know, the original history. But, you know, how did it stay hidden, you know, beyond this? The first layer I want to pull back on this onion, which we've covered on the show here before, is the clan wars, which is incredible. But there are Somali clans, and they have brought that culture over to America when all these other schemes start coming out. And it floods into politics, it floods into the fraud, it floods into family dynamics. You might actually be surprised to find that most of these whistleblowers coming forward are actually Somalis, exposing a lot of the Somali fraud. They're going to the House Fraud and Oversight Committee run by Republicans, reporting the fraud that they've seen or they know about because they've heard about it through the grapevine. But they're afraid to come forward themselves because their family is a part of a certain clan, and it might make them look bad, or their family own them if they come out publicly on some of this stuff. So you're actually having these clan wars come into play, and this floods into politics as well. You'll have candidates run as Republicans in the Somali community because, you know, their values in many cases do align with us in many regards, but you'll have the Democrat powerhouse clans run by Ilhan Omar and Omar Fateh, who ran for Minneapolis mayor, who are kind of the ones actually in office. They're kind of fighting back and forth throughout all of this, which is incredible. So that's one layer on why so much of this is hidden. The second layer of that is the local media itself. I can tell you that since this Tim Walz stuff has broken out, a lot of time, you know, they're used to working with me as an operative, as a communications staffer. Now I'm kind of out of that field right now. I'm just kind of covering stuff as a journalist at this point and a commentator. But they're letting me know, wow, we just appreciate that your platform blew up, because now when we run into an issue we want to cover in our newsroom, but our newsroom staff shut down the projects before we can report on them, we just give the information to you and you tweet it out and you continue the story from there, or you bring it to these whistleblower committees in the Republican House committee where they're covering fraud, and we're actually able to continue the story from there. That didn't exist before. None of this did. Now we're able to put this information out, and guys like you, I'm going to be going on with Scott Jennings here after. We covered it on Laura Ingraham a couple nights in a row here as well. Now the stuff's blowing up, and we're able to DM Chris Rufo and go, hey, here's these whistleblowers on Twitter coming out, and then we're just able to amplify these stories, which is incredible. This stuff just didn't exist before, but now it does, and we can actually go deeper into this stuff and uncover the fraud. And of course, a dynamic that more people are familiar with is obviously Democrat, basically complicity. You will have instances of feeding our future. So this is in 2020 when it really started to amplify. You had a state government that, after a long time sitting on their hands, eventually attempted stop payments. It was quickly shut down because you had Senator Omar Fateh and City Councilman Jamal Osman, who also recently just came out this week saying it's racist to question the Somali community throughout all of this. But he himself actually turned over a dormant nonprofit that was meant to feed children to two other fraudsters that went on to commit $13 million in food fraud in the Feed Our Future scandal. This is a city councilman elected by Democrats, and he's a part of the fraud too. And before that, his wife actually had a nonprofit that ended up getting shut down by Keith Ellison as a fraudulent shell organization. So we have two instances of this, but he's saying it's racist to question any of this, but he's literally a part of the fraud, and they're covering him right now on these mainstream news stations. But thankfully, we get to come out here and go, well, by the way, Osman, you're actually a part of that. And they actually came out and celebrated with Amy Bach, the head henchman behind Feed Our Future, the one white lady in the whole entire process. The other 76 are of East African descent, which is going to be the countries of Somalia, Somaliland, Kenya, and Ethiopia. Those are the all-encompassing, but it's mostly just Somalia. They end up saying it's racist, you got to stop these payments. They did, because they used all of their authority on the council, in the state senate, in the state house, with all of these pushings, and they stopped the stop payments. And Tim Walz then gets to come back and go, well, we can actually go through your bank accounts, and this is a way we can kind of get around that stop payment issue. We can subpoena the bank records and find out where this money's going. They willingly chose not to, because all of these advocates that were on the council, in the Senate, in the House, were telling Tim Walz, we're going to go after you and we're going to call you a racist if you continue on with that. So now we have Tim Walz complacent and complicit in this entire process, sitting on his hands. We had to wait till the feds to come in. Then they really don't even start until 2022, right ahead of the next election. But of course, we have a complicit media, and we don't have voices to actually amplify this on the national stage. And therefore, they all swing to re-election once again. Now, we are actually in a slightly different position. We're exposing this on the national stage, and we might have a fighting chance now in 2024. So we're actually leveling the playing field. But and unfortunately, I do have to mention this as well. Part of it to do is just simply put, lazy Republicans, not complicit Republicans, but lazy Republicans. Because I'll tell you one instance here that we just broke today. My senator, Senator Michael Holmstrom, he's been in the job for 2 weeks. That's it. We ended up going to the Hennepin County Courthouse after a news story had broke that of the one state case brought in throughout all this process, it was a $7.2 million Medicaid fraud scheme run out of a P.O. box. The jury came back after 4 hours of deliberation only and said, this guy's guilty, case closed. Guess what? The judge appointed by Governor Mark Dayton, the Democrat before Walz, overturns the case in an unprecedented decision. So we have a unanimous jury decision overturned. So 2 weeks into the job, not even a week into the job, we end up going actually out there and looking into the case. Because Rufo report had just gone out. I was just on Ingram. And we're like, let's dig into this thing. Let's see how, you know, rock solid this was. Maybe there's a reason she actually threw this thing out and reversed it. But unfortunately, Jesse, I fear the worst. She wasn't bribed. She wasn't threatened. But this is just who she is. Which is just insane. Because we looked back at some of her other case files. And she had taken a violent criminal conviction and overturned that one, and this individual, guess what, went in on to commit a mass shooting in Hennepin County. So I just fear this is who she is, unfortunately. But we went through and we went hours into the courthouse and were turned away, not given a reason on why. We couldn't see exhibits in this case where in the public record only simply show there's an undisclosed amount of money sent to an undisclosed foreign country, sent to an undisclosed individual. Well, could this be a large sum of money sent to the Horn of Africa to fund terrorism? We can't find out because we can't get a hold of the records. So we end up calling for several more hours after that and are told the case is sealed. Only Judge Sarah West can unseal them. The judge who overturned the conviction. So we end up going forward. We send out several requests, email, phone, voicemail, as well as next day delivery notification from the senator's office saying, we need these files. We finally hear back, not because of the official request we sent through the senator's office, who will be on the Judiciary Committee, a major committee that's going to oversee their courthouse and their funding, by the way. But they found out because people naturally were covering the story and they read the letter on social media after it hit millions of views. That's how they ended up seeing it. So we let them know, if we don't see these documents, we will be suing you. So not tough written letters, but actual real action. We have now just been informed today, this morning, that those instances and those exhibits of the undisclosed money being sent overseas will be released to us. And if we receive those will be coming out publicly here soon. But throughout that process, a lot of Republicans were telling us to sit on our hands and, hey, you've only been on the job for a couple of weeks. You should really just sit back and learn the ropes. And this really isn't even that big of a story. Let the journalists handle it. Well, that's how we're in this situation, guys. We're not covering it because we're running to these newsrooms. We're running to Somali clan wars and complicit Democrats. We have to actually get out there and cover this stuff and expose it. So that's really the path forward. We just have to be tougher on this, and we have to use the resources at our disposal, actually go out there and get the national media coverage, cover it, so it becomes stories that cannot be ignored anymore. And that's just simply put how it has to actually go. But, you know, at the root of all this, it is Somali fraud. So let's dig into the numbers here a little bit. Poverty in the Somali community in Minnesota, 58%. Food stamps, 42%. Unemployment rate, 40%. We're in the single digits for everyone else in Minnesota. No high school education, 41%. And at least $1 billion lost to fraud. But hey, they pay a little bit under $70 million in taxes annually.
Jeez. Dustin, What's your, obviously there's a lot that still has to be uncovered. What's your interpretation on just how involved in this Tim Walz is? Do you think Tim Walz looked the other way, actively participated? What's your impression of the Walz involvement?
To put it simply, I don't think he's smart enough to actually get involved in the terms of like actually being in it. I mean, that'd be giving way too much credit, Jesse. I'm just saying. This guy is a knucklehead after all. But I do believe that this man changes with every season. And if you go back to his career in the year 2000, I mean, this guy has just changed year after year, cycle after cycle, to adapt to what he thinks is going to make himself more electable. So early on, he was kind of a, you know, quote unquote, a blue dog Democrat, a moderate. And he progressively got more and more progressive as the years went on, up to the point of we're going to kill babies after they're born and not give them medical protections right as he's about to run for governor. Then he completely flips. He's going to be this ultra progressive superstar at this point. And then the rest is kind of history right there. He's been going further and further to the left on these issues. But ultimately, at the end of the day, Tim Walz is out for Tim Walz. I mean, that's just simply put what it is. And when you see multiple statewide elections come within one percentage point of winning Minnesota last cycle in 2022. And this is before all of the media exposure, all of the different tools Republicans now have at our disposal in the state of Minnesota. We had two come within one percentage point. We're talking about less than 10,000 votes. There's 100,000 plus Somalis in Minnesota. Are you going to be the one that actually disrupts this voter base that does vote predominantly for you? It doesn't mean all of them do. Still plenty of Somalis are Republican. They have many conservative social belief systems, and those individuals do vote Republican sometimes. But a mass majority of the time, they do vote Democrat, in particular in Minneapolis, St. Paul, the Twin Cities region. Now there's some more conservative Somalis out in the St. Cloud area in central Minnesota where I kind of reign from, and that's kind of where my political career started as a field office director out there. But at the end of the day, this is a Democrat stronghold community, and they're ultimately the reason why he and others are in office right now, because of those very slim margins at the statewide level.
Dustin, this fraud, and I realize there's plenty of fraud uncovered, plenty to speak about. I am curious, are these first-generation Somalis, second-generation Somalis? I mean, Somalis didn't start getting to this country till the 90s. Who are these people?
So, good question, and a very important one on the path forward, in my opinion. So, in 1991, we had civil war breaking out in the Horn of Africa and Somalia, Somaliland, you know, that debate on there. Siad Barre, the socialist dictator, who, by the way, Ilhan Omar, her father, was a leading colonel for his army in the socialist regime that committed genocide, frankly, not to put it lightly. That is when they first started coming over, because, you know, you're just truly at war. You know, goodwill Americans want to bring you in, Lutheran services, Catholic services, etc. You know, those first generation, and many of them are pretty good people who wanted to make a life here, and they quickly, you know, translated American to Somali in written and verbal formats, started to try to build culture here and try to assimilate. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of that falls on Republicans for not initially getting involved in that community right away, because now it's just Democrats. They really didn't help them assimilate in any way. It pushed Republicans further against them and Democrats more for them. And now Democrats have a monopoly on this community. And they frankly like it that they're not assimilating, because in many cases they don't speak the language, but Democrats have millions of dollars, and also a lot of their reps are Somali. They speak the language. They can go canvass in these neighborhoods and win over their votes much, much easier, despite some of their culture actually being relatively conservative. And then you have Barack Obama and George Bush sending more Somalis over. So in a stage where normally, oh, they've been here for a while, they've had kids, they're speaking English because they went to American high schools and middle schools, we're restarting the clock constantly. as we bring in more and more new Somalis. So normally where maybe things might have leveled out and we're having some assimilation actually occur, we're restarting the clock constantly. And that's how we get these numbers of almost like upward to 60% in poverty. And we wonder why there's a problem here. We refuse to actually fix the problem. And that is why the Trump administration, frankly, does need to use every tool at their disposal to denaturalize and deport as many Somalis as we can that have not followed the law. Because if you are a Somali who came here legally and you want to do all the good things, cool. That's great. We want you here. If you are someone who came here illegally, and, you know, quite frankly, statistically, if you did that illegally, there's no saying on the other crimes you're probably committing in the process. You probably need to go home.
Dustin, what is your take on how many illegals there are in that community? Obviously, the legals are well documented, as you already pointed out, George Bush, Barack Obama, I got that. But when people think about illegal immigration, they generally don't think about Somalia, being as how it's a little bit far away. But they're coming here illegally?
In many cases, we are finding that due to new investigations, research through Kristi Noem and Kash Patel and the different agencies right now in the Trump administration. In one case, Operation Shield came to the Twin Cities. I think they investigated like, you know, 800 or so, and I might be off on that number a little bit, but stupid math, 800 to 1,000, let's say. They found in half of those cases verifiable fraud occurring on their applications. So in the instances we've investigated so far, which, you know, relatively small, you know, 1/100th of the number, half of them were illegal, you know, in terms of how their applications were set up, how they worked with Lutheran and Catholic services to come over here, the sponsors that they used. They found that half of the cases they've investigated so far were in fact illegal. So, and we wonder why over half of them are in poverty right now. It's because they're not employed. And they're probably, in many cases, going back to these tactics from, you know, trying to just survive being in a war-torn country, constantly in fight or flight, and just going, wow, we have this amazing safety net in Minnesota. I could just use that and live a nice, happy life and be way better than I was in Somalia. And I don't even have to work.
What a frigging world. Good grief. Dustin, as always, thank you, brother, for unloading on us. I appreciate it. That was disheartening. I knew it was bad. It's actually worse than I thought. Tyler O'Neill knows a bit about this stuff as well. We'll talk to him next. I got an email yesterday from a 70-year-old man. He was thanking me, which shouldn't be thanking me. He was thanking me because, hey, Jesse, I finally took your advice, and I started working out and taking chalk. And he said, and I quote, "I feel like I could kick through a brick wall. I look great, I feel great, and my wife loves it, so thank you." I love getting these emails. I get them from men. I get them from women. Natural herbal supplements from chalk can change your entire life. Do you want to feel so much better at work, in a better mood, more energy, more focus when you get home from work, when you get home from school? Do you want to feel like doing something instead of feeling like plopping down on the couch and just doing nothing because you're so wiped and gassed all the time? Chalk is the way. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk. I have been taking a male vitality stack for 3 years. 3 years, actually 4 years by now. 4 years I've been taking a male vitality stack from Chalk. I feel so freaking good. Chalk.com/JesseTV.
And they contribute nothing. The welfare is like 88%. They contribute nothing. I don't want them in our country, I'll be honest with you, okay? Somebody would say, oh, that's not politically correct. I don't care. I don't want them in our country. Their country is no good for a reason. Their country stinks. And we don't want them in our country. I can say that about other countries, too. We don't want them to help. We have to rebuild our country. You know, our country's at a tipping point. We could go bad. We're at a tipping point. I don't know if people mind me saying that, but I'm saying it. We could go one way or the other, and we're going to go the wrong way if we keep taking in garbage into our country. Ilhan Omar is garbage. She's garbage. Her friends are garbage. These aren't people that work. These aren't people that say, let's go, come on, let's make this place great. These are people that do nothing but complain. They complain. And from where they came from, they got nothing. You know, they came from paradise, and they said, this isn't paradise. But when they come from hell, and they complain and do nothing but we don't want them in our country. Let them go back to where they came from and fix it.
You got to admire the fact he doesn't mince words. Joining me now, Tyler O'Neill, senior editor at the Daily Signal. Tyler, just how fraudulent is the Somali community in this country?
I mean, so many of the stories we're hearing out of Minnesota are just so egregious. And it stands somewhat to reason. I mean, I wouldn't say exactly what Trump said, partially because I know that there are some Somalis who are also whistleblowers engaged in calling out some of the corruption here. But we're talking about a country in West Africa that is well known, well associated with piracy, that has fallen apart in civil war, that has, you know, abused its people for a very long period of time. And your heart has to go out to some of these people. But at the same time, we don't want to bring their pathologies here to the United States of America. And that is unfortunately what we're seeing. Now, granted, all the people involved in these scandals represent a small portion of the Somali community. But if you look at the Feeding Our Futures scandal in Minnesota, you'll see how many of these defendants are Somali. And these people aren't just the ones who are charged. People are pleading guilty. People are being convicted. People are being given prison sentences for this massive fraud. And the woman who set up the NGO is a white woman, but most of the other defendants are Somalis. And it really, you know, it really raises important questions. And I think America is a powerful melting pot. We have a proud history in this country of assimilation for different immigrant groups. You know, many of my ancestors are Irish and came in. There were all those no Irish need apply signs. There was a really hard time that Irish people faced before we finally were accepted as part of American society. And yet, you know, mostly the Irish assimilated. What we're seeing here in Minnesota is, on a large scale, the Somali community is not assimilating to the degree that we need in our country. And it's really not assimilating to the degree that they need to maintain their welfare state in the state of Minnesota. Because this is the kind of thing, you cannot have a Scandinavian-style welfare state and open borders. It just does not work. You need a level of trust in the society that cannot be broached. And what we're seeing here is, on a tremendous scale, the abuse of that welfare state. And I think this is a huge wake-up call. It needs to be a wake-up call, not just to the Democratic farmer labor leaders in Minnesota, but it also is a wake-up call to the entire leftist establishment and the leftist worldview that says we need a massive welfare state and open borders. I can tell you what happens when you have both of those policies, and it's what's happening in Minnesota right now.
Tyler, you mentioned the Irish, and they eventually assimilated. I mean, the Italians assimilated. We had Jewish neighborhoods assimilated. But the Somalis have not. Why? What is the reason? Why did others find a way to assimilate? And there are several in the Somali community in this country who don't even speak English. They're frankly not even attempting to do so. Why?
Yeah, I think there are many reasons for that. The Somali community there in Minnesota is, there are areas that are essentially all Somali, very high percentages. So they create these essentially ghettos. But there's also another aspect of this, and that is the radical Islam connection. And I want to be very careful here because I don't believe that Islam itself is incompatible with American freedom. I know a lot of patriotic Muslims who, you know, and I'm not a Muslim, so I don't know what the true version of Islam is. I think a lot of us, a lot of especially evangelical Christians like myself, tend to look at the Quran and see passages in the Quran that advocate for violence and say the real type of Islam is the oldest type of Islam. I think that's misunderstanding Islam, because Islam is a religion of law where you have many different imams, and it matters which imam you're listening to. But so many cases, especially in the Somali community there in Minnesota and Minneapolis, you get these mosques where these imams are preaching the older form of Islam, that very noxious type of Islam that supports radical Islamic terrorism and that supports, you know, the opposition to American freedom. And so we have to be careful. I don't believe that every Muslim is a threat to this country. I know many great patriotic Muslims. But we cannot ignore the connections between the Somali community in Minnesota and terrorist groups like Al-Shabaab. Many of these fraud scandals, if you trace the money, some of the money is being sent back to Somalia to support the terrorist group Al-Shabaab. This is something that now is being investigated by the federal government to verify all of these claims. This is something that Chris Rufo did a lot of digging and connected the dots. There are many people on the ground in Minnesota who've been following these fraud scandals for a while, and they've been finding these connections. And we've known. I mean, the FBI had been working, and to some degree, the Somali community had worked with the FBI in response to some of these connections. So again, this is not something where every single Somali in Minnesota or even in Minneapolis is suspect. But this community has former ties to terrorism, has some ties now that we need to be looking at. And this is really a heartbreaking scandal, because it underscores not just the failure to assimilate of this group, but also some of the radical strains in Islam that do pose a threat to America. And I think we need to be clear that radical Islam, the ideology that says, that interprets jihad as a violent struggle to take control politically, is a threat to our country and has not ceased to be here in the United States.
Tyler, what was the Arabella Advisors Network?
Oh, yes. So Arabella Advisors always told me that they were not a network. It was a for-profit. Yes, exactly. That's how I react too. It was a for-profit company that did a lot of services for various nonprofits that just so happened to essentially have been created by this for-profit entity. So, you know, that raises all sorts of questions. But Arabella Advisors was a central hub of the left's dark money network, as I discussed in my book, The Woke to Post, The Dark Money Cabal, Manipulating the Federal Government. Many of these NGOs, so the way that it works, and you know, you have the story up there, what exactly just happened. This was a big announcement last month where Arabella just said, we're no longer existing. We've sent some of our services, some of our contracts, our work we did, to a new entity called Sunflower Services. And then there was yet a third entity that was propped up where the CEO of Arabella went there. And there are all sorts of interesting questions. Like if you look at Virginia, you know, I went to the records in Virginia of businesses, and they said in their records that the entity formerly known as Arabella was now going by a different name, and it was the name of this new firm created by the CEO of Arabella Advisors. And so this raises questions. What we saw in the news release was saying that many of the 501c3 nonprofits, groups like New Venture Fund, which takes the lead in this, and these, by the way, are nonprofits that directed money to leftist activist groups that sent staff and policy into the Biden administration. So these are very powerful leaders on the left. They get a lot of money and they send it into these activist groups. They prop up new activist groups for specific causes. And essentially, you know, what critics say is these entities exist to enable donors to prop up causes without those donors being tied to the specific actions that they want to support. And so that is the dark money aspect here. Arabella ceased to exist, but the entities that, you know, the nonprofits that are engaging in all this political activism, they very much continue to exist. So New Venture Fund still exists, and now New Venture Fund is a majority shareholder, a majority investor in this new entity, Sunflower Services. But not all of the nonprofits that worked with Arabella Advisors are with Sunflower Services. Only the ones that are 501c3 nonprofits are. The C4s, which are regulated differently by the IRS and can endorse political candidates and can tell you to go vote in a specific way, these C4 organizations are not tied to Sunflower Services. And I've been asking them where they are tied to, because I think this is a very big question. Nobody has responded to me. Now, it's interesting. I reach out to New Venture Fund, and they're saying, oh, yeah, we're proud to work with Sunflower Services. I reach out to another fund, and they're like, yeah, we're proud to. I reach out to the 501c4s, crickets. And there's a real question. You know, I think a lot of this has to do with Arabella Advisors being called out by the right, by, you know, people like Scott Walter, who had a wonderful book about Arabella Advisors. I'd like to take a little bit of credit with my book as well and Testimony on Capitol Hill, where many of us in conservative media have been calling out what the Arabella network had been doing. And now that President Trump, there's a new sheriff in town, and he's looking at the funding sources of the left, and he's specifically looking at any sort of ties between the left's dark money network and Antifa. And I think it's going to be hard for him to establish things because these guys are very smart at covering their tracks. So even if, and I don't have evidence that the left's dark money network is funding Antifa, but what I do know is that if they are, they're going to cover their tracks in every way that they possibly can. So, you know, hats off to President Trump for wanting to investigate this, but this looks like a defensive move for this network to be separating itself into 501c3 and 501c4 sides so that it doesn't fall on the wrong side of the IRS.
Absolutely fascinating stuff. Tyler did write a great book, by the way, Woke to Puss. I would highly recommend it. Final thoughts. Next. Heartburn sucks. You ever have that? And I'll be honest with you. I went to community college. I don't know the difference between heartburn and indigestion, right? But I know that it sucks. It's all uncomfortable and it's horrible. And I'm 44 now. I used to be able to just eat whatever. Give me all the jalapenos and I'd be fine. Now I get it. Well, I used to get it. I discovered through a friend cowboy colostrum. Actually, my sister, as a matter of fact, she was telling me, oh, it's the best, it's the best, it's the best. Your gut will work better. I didn't necessarily believe it, but I started putting a couple scoops in my coffee every morning. Mine's chocolate. It's delicious, by the way. So I have a cup of chocolate coffee in the morning. I don't remember the last time I had heartburn. It's gone. My gut just works well. You have gut problems? Maybe a little heartburn? Yeah, I suggest you give it a shot. CowboyColostrum.com, code JesseTV. We have to start monitoring the imports in this country. First, we have to start deporting a lot of these people. We have to have the resolve to get them out. There's no need to ever import people from Somalia, like, ever. That should not be a thing that happens. Let's get the ones we have here out, and let's, in the future, care enough about our country to mind who comes into the country. Just a reminder, as we've said many times before, it's the ultimate patriotism test because you care about who gets access to things you actually love. If you think everyone should come in, you don't love it. You monitor who comes into your home, don't you? Get them out. And my goodness, stop bringing them here. All right, we'll do it again.